Through the International Association of Emergency Managers, Joanne is a credentialed certified emergency manager and serves on their special needs caucus. Joanne's commitment to education the public about being prepared in her life's passion. She believes in inspiring the average citizen to get real and to get ready. Joanne is an experienced consultant with a unique ability to refine complicated information in a simple and direct way. She is a frequent requested motivational speaker at domestic and international conferences. Boy, I can't wait to hear what you have to say. We have some questions that we're going to start out with, Joanne, so if you're ready, I'll go ahead and get started.
I am.
Okay, great. Joanne, could you tell us a little bit about how you got into the field of work and how you merged being a professional organizer with emergency preparedness work?
Well, that's an interesting question. Let's see. Basically, when I was 20 years old at college at Chico State University in California, I worked on my degrees in sociology and social work, and my emphasis was community organizing. So organizing has been a major theme throughout my whole work career, and working with community groups and volunteerism and like that. So, but in the mid-1980s, I started my own business, Organized for Action, and I actually started out assisting people and just kind of went back from being a larger community organizer to helping people on a more personal level organize their businesses, their wardrobes, if you can believe that. I started with wardrobe organizing and morphed into organizing people in their general lives and businesses. Worked with a lot of entrepreneurs that really had a gift to give but didn't know how to simplify their life so that they could actually, you know, produce the results they wanted to in the world and be the contribution they were. That's when I got involved with the San Francisco Bay Area National Association of Professional Organizers, too. But then in 1989, the Loma Prieta earthquake hit San Francisco and the Bay Area, and I was here for it, and I freaked. I realized that I didn't know what to do to really take care of myself, and I also had an epiphany in that I saw that I was so focused on myself that I wasn't able to go out and offer myself as a volunteer in the community. And volunteering has been a major core piece of my life. So that started me on a quest to how to break through my own fear of disasters or bad things happening. So in that combined with being a professional organizer and spending years working with people, seeing how people wanted to get their lives organized but didn't quite want to get to that point. You know, people had a lot of resistance about preparing for the unexpected. So it was a long, slow progression that got me in the mid-90s to actually go full-time in community organizing around the whole disaster preparedness field, if that makes any sense at all.
Well, it sure does, and it's very interesting that it really came from a personal experience and how you have now turned it into something that can be useful to the rest of us out there to be better prepared.
Yes, it's very, very personal for me, and, you know, and that's what I think made the difference and also what's given me the gift of really being able to educate the public and the community, because I do see it from, I'm not a trained first responder. I don't know if you remember, Diane, but I'm the one who doesn't do blood well. So, you know, for me, it's really about breaking through my own fears and educating myself and taking training classes and working with other clients and seeing not only my own resistance and fears, but other people's, and kind of merging all of that into, you know, the current work I do.
Mm-hmm. Right, and to take action. Right. Well, that certainly makes sense. Well, let me ask you, could you tell us a little bit about how organizing our day-to-day lives and preparing for disasters are related?
Well, yeah, it's interesting because mostly we don't look at it from that angle. But having been a professional organizer for years, I can tell you that the more we have more my life is organized or our lives are organized, the more we're able to get our hands around what I call the steering wheel of our life, you know, to get our hands on what are the critical pieces of our lives, our important, our vital documents, our vital, you know, relationship to what we have. You know, many of us have just in our homes or our offices, we have so much of value, not just monetary value, but personal or critical information, business information. How do we, you know, keep that stuff organized? But also, if it were to all go poof, you know, how do we recover? How do we take the steps before something, excuse the term, bad happens, to, you know, mitigate the dangers from an emergency or a disaster? So really, every aspect of our lives, you know, organizing really supports preparedness.
Well, I hear what you're saying, but it certainly sounds like that might be a lot of work. So how do we get organized with our already busy lives? But I certainly understand that it would help not feeling overwhelmed, but how do we do it?
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, preparing for the unexpected, preparing for emergencies or disasters is a dynamic process, as is getting organized. You know, it's not like one day we're going to go in and clear everything out and we're going to be perfectly organized life or perfectly prepared. Life is not a static venture. It is a dynamic process. And I think the most important thing for all of us to really embrace is that we're never going to be perfectly organized or perfectly prepared. You can be the most prepared person in the world, but there's still that next thing to do or upgrade. I'm very well prepared compared to the average person, probably. I feel the need to personally, but also professionally, if I'm out preaching the word of preparedness, be prepared. But I can tell you right now, my will has been in my to-do pile needing to be updated for some time. So, you know, that's the next thing for me to do. So I think it's really, we have to look at it more like a process and not be overwhelmed by it, but take it a step at a time, but be in action, and that's the most important thing. And while you're organizing your life, once you're aware of what you need to do to be prepared for emergencies, you know, what types of documents you should have copied and backed up off-site, you know, what the steps you should take to prepare can actually be included in the process of organizing your life in general. Does that make sense?
It does. It almost sounds like you're saying we should have a checklist or a template to go by, and that would make things easier, and that we don't have to do it all in one day, but we can do it over time.
Exactly. It can't be done in one day. And I always worry about people who go out and buy one of those pre-made emergency kits and comes back and says, oh, I'm prepared now. I'm like, oh, my God, please don't. Don't, you know, a little kit that you bought at a store is a good thing. It's a step in the right direction, but it's not the whole package. And I think we really need to see that. And I have the checklist in the chapter in my book. I give checklists. So, yeah, it's very important to just know what you need to get and keep moving forward. Keep staying in action. Be organized for action.
So how does your chapter tie into some of the other chapters, and some of those authors have been talking during this series of teleclasses? How do you tie in to the other chapters in the book, and can you give us an example?
Well, let's see. One example easily would be Angela Wallace's chapter on creating a home office that works for you. When you have an organized office, you're more likely to know where your important, most critical you know, documents are. You should definitely have a backup system and have things, you know, that are critical to your business or your home office copied off, you know, backed up off-site somewhere, and be able to get your hands on those critical items. So having your office organized, I'm using Angela's chapter as an example, is a huge piece to being not only organized but prepared for the unexpected. But really, every chapter of the book has some aspect, because the book is about get organized today, every chapter has something about organizing that really relates to being prepared for emergencies and disasters too. Having your closets organized, knowing where, you know, where your supplies are so you can get your hands on them. There's a chapter in the book on organizing your garage. And, you know, so many people say, well, I know I have duct tape and I have cutting shears and rope in my garage, but do you know where it is in your garage? And if the power were to go out or systems were to go down, would you have to go fumbling around your garage to find those things, those supplies, you know, or do you have them already organized in a place and in a, in say, a movable kit where you on wheels that you could move out if you had to move quickly, like that. There's also one other thing. There's a chapter that Nancy Castelli wrote on getting organized for the planet, and it's about how to live and be organized in a more eco-friendly way, and that's a real area of passion for me also, because I feel very, very devout about our natural resources on our planet. And when you live and you live more simply, you reduce, you reuse, you recycle what you've got, it makes a difference. It's all part of being organized, and it's part of being prepared not only for the immediate emergency, but being prepared to survive. So knowing how to live in concert with the earth and our resources and being mindful. I always use the example, how many people just run the tap water like they're the only person on the planet using water, you know? And so you're brushing your teeth using gallons of water. Those gallons of water you use to brush your teeth one time could be all the water you may have for a week for yourself or your family. So, you know, in Nancy's chapter on getting organized for the planet, you know, it's those types of things. Start living your life now as if those resources are as precious as they are when something, an emergency or a disaster has happened and they're not there. So it helps build our muscle any direction you go. It's all a win-win. It's a win for us. It's a win for our planet. It's a win for those around us that are important.
Well, you really hit some key areas. In the garage and the home office, boy, now you got me. I'm going to have to buy the book myself to read all the chapters as well. Certainly sounds useful.
That's right.
Well, can you tell us, in your chapter, you talk about some key steps to preparing. If you would, pick one of those and tell us more about that.
Okay, well, let's see. How about your relationship? Your relationships. And when I say your relationships, I mean, who are the people that are most important to you in your life? You know, the people you live with, your partner, your spouse, your children, could be your pets. You know, what about, you know, your closest friends or family members? And also those of us who, you know, are in the professional world, who are the people that are most vital to us in a professional sense? So really, who are the people that we have regular contact with that if we were to, all of a sudden, there was a big, say, a big earthquake here in San Francisco, I'm knocking on wood as I say that. yikes. You know, and the phone systems went down, or the phone lines would immediately stay, or the power, the electrical system, power system to the city or the area went down either because of so many people trying to call in and out or damage from the emergency. How would you make a connection with the people that are most critical in your life that on a day-to-day basis we're so used to picking up the phone or getting on the internet and shooting out an email or a text message or Facebooking somebody? But what if all those systems really aren't available to us the way they are on a normal day. What would you do?
That certainly would present some problems. Now, you living on the West Coast and I live on the East Coast in Florida, you know, doesn't matter the type of disaster, does it? Because it sounds like whether it's a hurricane, which we're in the middle of our season now,
yep.
And I guess with earthquakes, they can happen at any time, this information would be useful in any type of disaster.
Absolutely. And I think one of the points I'd like to make at this point is there's a distinction when we use the term in the business between emergency and disaster. And an emergency can be, you know, anything from somebody broke into your home or your business and stole your computer, or there was a flood in your home or office, or there was a localized power outage, okay, or a fire. So it can be a very individualized event. And emergencies happen every day, everywhere, all over the country. And our normal, you know, public safety systems tend to do well with that. When something becomes a disaster is when it affects a larger segment of the community, or there are multiple incidents that really tax the resources of the local public response agencies. So when something becomes more large scale, it really does have a bigger impact on all of us being able to function. But the truth is, whether what you're experiencing is an emergency, you know, you had a flood in your office or home, or I had a fire or something like that, to a large-scale disaster, the steps I recommend you take to be prepared will prepare you for any of life's unexpected events, from, you know, individual emergency to a large-scale disaster. So, you know, the steps are really basic, but they really do cover a range of life's situations
mm-hmm.
that can happen.
So I guess in the business people might call that an all-hazards plan. And
yes, really, that's what we call it in the business. Thank you, Diane. We talk about all-hazards plans. So what are the basic things you do to cover? And then, of course, depending on where you live, you want to have a special plan, Diane, with you being on the East Coast in Florida. You definitely have something specific to if there's a hurricane warning or watch, what you do in a hurricane. Okay, and since so many of us travel, it's actually useful for us to be aware that, you know, I was back in Florida last year and I was there during hurricane season, or you were recently out here in California. And in earthquakes, we take different steps. We have definitely little to no warning with earthquakes.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but there are specific actions to take for the different types of emergencies, correct?
Very good.
So one thing, back to the thing about your relationship, one of the things we really encourage you to do is to, in the business we call it have a communications plan, but it's really about having a plan for what to do to reach out to the people who are most critical in your life in times of emergency, when you may not be able to use all those different communication tools that you use on a normal day so freely. So, you know, we usually recommend picking somebody, one person who lives outside of your area. They shouldn't live in the area that you live in. Just because if the power system's impacted for you, it may be for them also. We oftentimes suggest that you choose somebody who lives out of state, because the chances of the phone systems not being impacted are greater. And choose a person who is very, excuse the term, but well organized, that you can give your important contacts to. And choose somebody who's a good communicator. I have my very dear friend Sarah in Virginia, who's had my address list over the years, and recently I totally trust her. I gave her the password for my personal and professional email accounts, so that if anything big were to happen, I could, if I had only one phone call to make or one text message to make, I can send it to Sarah saying, "Sarah, I'm alive, I haven't been home, but, you know, I'm okay. Would you please let my, you know, my people know that I'm alive and well, that they should not be trying to call me because I don't want to be a burden on the power system. I want to contribute to my community and not be a burden, but also I need to focus on taking care of myself. So like that. So Sarah can send a message out, let people know that she's been in communication with me. I'm alive and well. People should not be trying to contact me immediately, and that she's my communication source. Choose one person, you give them your information, and, you know, it can be as simple as writing names and phone numbers down on a list and mailing it to that person. So it doesn't have to be a fancy list. It could be a copy of your old address book. You know, sometimes people want to wait until everything's perfect and matchy-poo. Don't wait for that.
Okay, well, that's some real good advice.
Yeah, you can always update later. I always tell people, date everything, you know. If you're going to do anything, put August 2010 on the list so she knows that's the list, and then, you know, send a new one when you have it better organized or in a new format.
Well, you know, we were talking about key relationships and key people, and that brings me to my next question. How do we get the whole family involved in this process? Because sometimes, you know, preparedness is a hard thing to get people motivated about. So, you know, what about the kids and what about the older folks and what about people with disabilities? Can they be included? Should they have a role? How do we go about that?
Absolutely. Underlined, bolded, and italicized. Absolutely, yes. You should include everyone in your planning. And the truth is, you know, you have to be age appropriate, of course, but over the years, I have spoken to hundreds, if not thousands, of classrooms of children. And I'll tell you, I've spoken to kids as young as in kindergarten, and they get it. They understand. They're aware of this stuff. And, you know, the more we start talking and planning and including them at a young age, it's like building a muscle. They build a muscle, and if you're really, you know, inclusive, they get it. They get it, and they'll know what to do and be able to assist. And so it's important to include everyone. I always say, too, people with disabilities, this is a huge area that I work in the disaster planning field. And so often, you know, the work we've done has been like, well, we have to prepare the people who serve people with disabilities. Au contraire, people with disabilities have many abilities, and they may have a disability or two or whatever that may limit certain actions like mobility or hearing or sight or cognitive. But everybody has to be responsible for themselves, and everyone can take actions to be prepared. So it's important to include everyone and to have regular talks about this stuff. You know, we encourage family members to, you know, bring it up and have like a family talk every month or quarterly or however you want to organize it. You know, hear where our supplies are. I know many kids that will go home after learning about how to be prepared for different emergencies. They go home and ask their parents, hey, where's the water? Where are the flashlights? Where do I go if I can't get home or you can't pick me up at school? So, you know, it's really an affair that involves everyone. And the more you are inclusive, the greater your safety net. And the greater the safety net for everyone involved. Pets you can't really talk to, but you can work it out with your family members or your neighbors how to have a plan for your pets.
Yeah, because I know at least here in Florida, some shelters will take them and some won't, and you have to have vaccinations. So I guess there's a lot of preparing when you think about pets and disasters.
There really is. And, you know, pets are so important to people. I mean, they're as much a family member to a lot of people, you know, and some people that's who they live with or their pets. And, you know, have you made a plan? You know, if you're at work, does a neighbor know how to, you know, get to your animals and feed them or care for them in your absence? Or, you know, are they tagged so that if they were, you know, to get loose or you were to be separated, you would be able to be reunited with information. There's a lot of work being done in this whole area on a larger scale, but, you know, once again, it all goes back to individual personal preparedness.
It sure does.
And that's what will really make the difference. And that's what gives us as individuals some power in the matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because a lot of this has to do with loss of control. And what I'm hearing you say is that we probably have more control over things than we think.
Yes. And we do and we don't, you know, the yin and yang of life. The things that we have control over, it's important to take action and to be prepared and to be inclusive. And the things that are out of our control, we just have to let it be. But the things that we can take action on and get organized and prepared for, it's important that we do that. And it's also building a culture of responsibility and a culture of self-sufficiency and a culture of people who have the stamina to survive versus how come that, you know, the government didn't come and protect me? Not that the government shouldn't, but, you know, we can talk about that more later.
Okay. Well, I tell you, now might be a good point just to take a break from asking questions and to get back to that very important statement that we mentioned in the very beginning. And that had to do with a special offer that you mentioned that might be available or that will be available for those people that are listening to this call today. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. If you go to my website, all one word, organizeforaction.com, all spelled out, organizeforaction.com. The book Get Organized Today is available for this special promotional period through August 17th. And basically what I'll do is I'm paying the shipping and taxes. So if you go to my website, organizeforaction.com, you can get the book now up until August 17th at a special promotional rate of $24, which includes taxes and shipping fees.
Wow, that's a pretty good deal. I'm going to have to order mine tonight then.
You betcha.
All right, well, that's good. Thank you so much. You mentioned in your chapter that you approach preparing for emergencies a little different than, say, some of the agencies that we're familiar with, such as FEMA and the Red Cross. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. And what I mean by that is I'm really, in my chapter, I'm covering all the same, and I really want people to understand this because I think people are so inundated with so much information today that people sometimes get stifled from taking action to prepare because they don't know where to go or which, you know, which website to go to or which brochure to use or which list. I'm basically covering everything that is covered with FEMA or the Red Cross or your local emergency agencies in encouraging you to get prepared. The difference is I take a little bit more of a personal, emotional approach. So instead of just saying make a kit, make a plan, get trained, I'm saying your vital document, your vital relationship, your valuables, your survival. You know, I think too often in the business we're throwing information out at people, telling people what they should be doing, and it just we get blinded with, yeah, I know I should be doing this, I know I should be doing that, but I don't really know why because, gosh, I just have to get my kids home and, you know, get to bed tonight and get ready for work tomorrow, and you want me to get prepared for, you know, disasters, and I know it could happen someday, but I'm going to bank on it's not going to happen to me, blah, 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 blah. So basically the only difference in the way I've approached this is really having, you know, coming at it from, you know, if everything were to go poof right now, do you know where your critical, you know, most critical documents are, your identification, you know, the things that are most fundamental to who you are as a person, you know, your relationships, who are the people most important to you? That, you know, in the business we call it a communication plan, as I mentioned earlier, but it's really about the people you love or the people that are most vital to your life and like that. So it's the same information, just a little different twist and approach.
Yeah, well, you know, I like that because so often with emergency agencies, they're treated, you know, they treat the general public as faceless, and it sounds like you are putting a face and a name and a heart to each person.
Yeah, that's because I'm one of them.
That's right. That's right. Very good.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. You know, a lot of people expect that public safety agencies should be able to protect them, and you kind of alluded to that earlier in the call. And, you know, we're used to dialing 911, and 3 to 5 minutes later, theoretically, they should be arriving on our doorstep and solving the emergency or at least making things better for the moment. Why can't we rely on that same type of response when it comes to large-scale emergencies?
That's a very good question, Diane, and a very important one, and I think one where we really, really need to educate the public. Because, you know, we live in a country, in America, that really, as much as we might find fault with things, our systems work incredibly well. And on a normal day-to-day basis, you know, our emergency response systems really typically work. I mean, you know, if you call 911, they're there within a few minutes, like you said. You know, if we need to get to the hospital, there may be a wait, but, you know, we can get in. But when something goes beyond what would be a normal day in a community, and God bless, even right now, with budgets being, you know, tightened everywhere throughout the country, we're even more aware that our public safety agencies are now, which we always thought were untouchable in terms of budget cuts, we're now seeing cuts to our most vital public safety agencies, which is just going to make everything tighter. But in a larger scale emergency where there's a much greater need, we don't have the emergency personnel to attend to everyone's needs like we would expect on a normal daily basis. And we're so wired to expect that, that we think, well, something big has just happened. Somebody's going to be there to take care of me. But you really, really cannot expect that. Even in the best case scenario, in the perfect utopian community where things work as perfectly as possible and there's plentiful budget and resources, even in the perfect world, when something goes beyond a normal day type of emergencies and it's larger scale and impacts more people, we are really, truly on our own. I think there's a national statistic, I may be a little off with this, but there's approximately one emergency trained public emergency personnel per every 300 people.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, on a normal day, that's invisible to us. The system mostly works. But anything outside of a normal day, where most of us are going to be taking care of ourselves, and calling 911 is not going to make the difference, you know, in getting somebody to us. And it's the other thing is, you know, the emergency system is complex, and I think we've really, in many ways, failed to train and educate the public properly on how complex the system is. So it's really, you know, in any community, there are thousands of buildings, thousands of businesses, or hundreds of businesses, thousands, hundreds to thousands of schools, organizations that all are expecting help or assistance. And when you look at it from the bigger picture, it's very daunting, but it really paints the reality of, like, as individuals or as small businesses or organizations, you know, we really need to be prepared to be on our own.
You know, I think that certainly was illustrated after Katrina, and, you know, I think a lot of people didn't understand why the resources couldn't arrive quick enough, but I think what you're saying certainly explains why, is that there were too many victims and not enough rescuers.
And thank you for bringing that up, Diane. there's another, you know, I mentioned earlier the distinction between emergencies being individual events and disasters being larger scale or multiple events. There's another domain called catastrophic events. 9/11 was a catastrophic event. Hurricane Katrina was really a catastrophic event. And these are even much larger and impactful and damaging. Oh, the tsunami that happened in the Indian Ocean back in 2004, 2005, a few years back. I mean, those are such huge catastrophic disasters that it really is beyond the capabilities of, you know, emergency, trained emergency personnel to do their job. So that's a whole other domain unto itself, but it really drives the picture home even more clearly of survival and being prepared to the best of our ability.
Yeah, it certainly can. And it sounds like in those horrific large-scale disasters that sometimes it just seems hopeless to do anything or to be able to protect ourselves. How can we motivate in those circumstances?
Well, first of all, none of us know where we're going to be or what role we'll be in when something happens. You could be the best prepared person on the planet, but if you're at the wrong place at the wrong time, you're not going to be the one giving assistance, but getting assistance. So I always encourage people to look at this as, you know, getting organized and getting prepared in general. Stay focused on what do I need to do to prepare my life today, you know, if something were to happen. So I think it's important to not let those large catastrophic events or really horrific events, you know, put us into a state of immobility, but to motivate us and go, okay, what do I need to do to be prepared in my life in general, you know, and what steps can I take? And then you do all that you can and the rest is out of our hands, you know. It's there's an element of life that we just have to accept is outside of our control. But the parts that are within our control, what action can we take? What can we do to be organized and prepared for life's unexpected events overall?
Well, we certainly have covered a lot of material, and it may be a good time now to open up for questions to the listeners. So if you have a question for Joanne, please press *6 on your phone and ask Joanne your question.
Okay, so that's good. Any questions out there? I'm hoping people, if you do have a question, what you need to do is hit *6. There may be no questions.
Joanne.
Yeah.
It's Rich Cunningham from the Public Works World. I just wanted to second an observation that had been made by both of you. In this regards, what the public can expect from public agencies during an emergency. And you know, no matter what the source of the emergency is, whether it's an earthquake or anything, the communication systems are going to be quickly overloaded. And I'm only mentioning this because of what happened in the earthquake in '89 where I participated. But the most important thing was that the people who had done even the most minimal of preparation in advance of the disaster were the ones that came out way ahead in the process. And I hate to relate it, but there was a building down in the marina that burned that had three writers in the building. Two of them kept backups of their computers in the desk right where the computer was, and everything they'd ever done, including the backups, went up in smoke. But one of the writers kept their backups in at their place where they had their job, downtown, in a Class A office building, and so they were untouched. And so it was just a simple maneuver like that made the huge difference in the outcome of their lives.
Wow. Thank you, Rich. Thank you. That is a great accent to what I mentioned earlier about backing up. And if anybody knows, I know it's Rich Cunningham. Rich was one of the key public responders in the city and county of San Francisco in 1989. And Rich Cunningham was the person who happened to be on the East Coast on September 11th that called me early in the morning and was the person who alerted me that the Twin Towers had been hit. And I happened to be the one working for the City and County of San Francisco Emergency Services that day. I was duty officer and acting director while my boss was out of town. So Rich and I both know intimately how quickly things can change and
right,
the impact
right.
of that. Thanks,
Rich. It's mind-boggling, absolutely mind-boggling.
Yeah.
And also, I just want to say thanks for the presentation from the two of you today. I thought it was a very, very good introduction, and I hope people make plans to get a copy of the book so they can integrate disaster management into the normal organization plan that is laid out.
Thanks, Rich. That wasn't even planned.
No, but how pertinent, especially, you know, when it comes from people with experience and something so simple can make such a big difference.
Very that's, simple stuff. Right?
Yeah, thank
just, you.
Just,
you know, highlights the importance of what we're discussing here today. Any other questions? Anyone else would like to ask a question of Joanne?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. I was wondering how NERT interacts with the city, how the organization of the community neighborhoods is supposed to organize and coordinate through the city of San Francisco.
Okay. Well, first of all, NERT stands for Neighborhood Emergency Response Team, but nationally, the title is CERT, Community Emergency Response Team. So for those of you that live anywhere outside of San Francisco where the program is called NERT, your program may be called CERT, Community Emergency Response Team, or some version thereof. You can go to your local fire department and or Google CERT and see if it's available in your community. And the CERT or NERT training, it teaches individuals, it's like a 20-hour training program, which seems like a lot, but it is usually conducted over 6 weeks in the evening or two or three Saturdays. And it is the most fascinating program. The local emergency response agencies teach the public how to not only be prepared and take care of ourselves, but how to assist the community, how to assist the first responder agencies in an emergency. So how to actually be part of the response network as volunteer citizen volunteers. But you receive training ahead of time that really, I call it the best win-win on the planet, because you get training and you get to exercise that muscle of preparedness individually, and you get motivated to prepare and organize yourself, but you also have an opportunity to go out and serve your community. So that's a really vital program. And having said that, I'm not sure I answered your question fully, did I?
Almost, a great basis. I was just wondering how specifically in San Francisco those individual neighborhoods, that organization coordinates and integrates with the city during an actual event.
Okay, well,
if something happened today, how does the communication plan work between the two and who does what?
Yeah, well, actually, I'll say something very briefly, and then I'm not sure who you are, but what I invite you to do is go to my website, organizeforaction.com, and feel free to send me an email, and I can give you a more detailed description. But
great.
For right now, let me say that community volunteers are through the protocol of the fire department and the local emergency services agency, are trained to one, in a major emergency, like a big earthquake, to deploy to different neighborhoods, what are called staging areas. And from there, the team, you know, you'll be wearing your cert helmet and your vest and be part of a team to go out and conduct light search and rescue or do basic medical assistance and things like that. So it's built into the system, and you have to take the training, and they will then, you know, give you the proper equipment and identification and, you know, connect you with your neighborhood so you're part of your neighborhood staging area and able to respond with your local people. So, and I can be, I'd be happy to give you a more detailed explanation if you send me an email or like that.
Thank you.
But this was perfect, actually, because the most important thing, one of the most vital steps to getting prepared is getting trained and knowing your community resources. So it's really important to know what's out there and where you can participate or contribute or, you know, and it's important to know we all have a gift to contribute. And in an emergency or disaster, that's once again true for all of us. I'll tell you, honestly, after all these years of being in the business, I still don't do blood well. And I'll never forget when I took the NERT training back in 1993 when I was in tears during the medical operations class when people had moved. They didn't even have real blood on them, and I was ready to pass out. The firefighter who was training me looked at me and said, "Lady, if you don't do blood, don't do blood in a disaster. There's all kinds of other things we need help with." He said, in the Loma Prieta earthquake, and this guy didn't know me, and I don't remember who he was, so I don't know who he is, but he gave me the greatest gift in the world. He said, "Lady, if you don't do blood, don't do blood. Go do something else." We needed people in Loma Prieta that had great organizational and great communication skills. The second that firefighter said that to me, I experienced a personal transformation. I went from being completely focused on myself and fear-based to, oh, you mean I can make a difference and contribute, and I don't have, you know, don't have to do the thing I'm not good at. So being trained and getting involved in your community is like a huge piece of being prepared and will really empower you and give you the wherewithal to, you know, step up to the plate.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
Anyone else? We'll take one more question.
Hello? Hey there. I'm just sitting here reading an article.
Rich?
Hello?
Oh, we heard you. Anybody? Any?
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's all right. Any other questions?
Well, then I have one for you, Joanne.
Okay.
What else would you like to share with us today about your work that you think might make a difference for each of us or any of us?
Well, let me see. I think I've already said it, but let me say it in closing. Really give yourself the gift of an organized and prepared life. I just on a personal note, I found out earlier today that a very old friend of mine from college was killed while she was out jogging by a car recently. And it really drove it. I was preparing for this call tonight, and it hit me in my gut big time that, you know, when Carrie went out for her jog, as she did most days of her life, I don't think she expected that to be it. But that is life. And that is something we're all faced with every day, whether it happens to us, you know, an individual event again or a large scale. We really don't know. And life, you know, our lives are important not only to ourselves but to those that depend on us or those who love us or those who, you know, we serve in some way through our work. So it's really important to have our lives simplified and organized, which is I think, highlighted throughout every chapter of the Get Organized Today book. And, you know, in culmination, mine being the last chapter, I thought that was apropos, about really preparing for emergencies or disasters. But also that it really is a dynamic process. And, I mean, I don't know about the rest of you, but I'm inclined to think that I should be perfect and have every little, you know, T-crossed and I-dotted in my life, and life just doesn't quite work that way. So I encourage everyone to give up that sense of like having to do things perfectly and just get started today. Organize for action. Take every step you take is a step in the right direction. Look at it instead of black or white that you're organized or not or prepared or not. Look at it as a process of upgrading, you know, to the next level. And that takes away that burden of like, oh, my God, there's so much to do. I can't do it all. But every step you take is a step in the right direction and will make a difference in your life and the people that count on you and the people that you serve. So, you know, none of us know where we'll be or where we'll be when or where when something will happen or where we'll be when it does or what role we'll be playing. But it's important that we all be ready and be organized and prepared and really be not only prepared for a few hours, but be prepared like that 72-hour thing we talk about in the business. Be prepared to be a survivor. You know, be prepared to really be on your own and have that muscle to survive for the long term. That's what I have to say.
Very well said. Could you remind us again about when the book launching is and what the location is?
Okay, yeah. In this, six of the co-authors out of the 19 co-authors in the book are from the San Francisco Bay Area. So for anyone in the San Francisco Bay Area, on August 17th, which I believe is a Tuesday night, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific time in San Francisco at a place called Modern Spaces, it's a wonderful little store in the South of Market area at 234 Townsend Street, we're going to have a book launch with the six Bay Area co-authors. And we'd love for you to join us if you can. And, so that's happening. And we also have one more teleclass coming up. Do you want to tell people about that, Diane, or should I?
Sure, I'll be happy to tell them.
Okay.
This is just a reminder to join us for the next teleclass. As you know, you have already registered for it by registering for this one. Don't miss this coming Tuesday, August 10th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for our very last call in the series. We will be talking to Angela Wallace of Wallace & Associates on creating a home office that works. Once again, that will be Tuesday, August 10th, 5 p.m. Pacific time. I'd like to thank you, Joanne, so much for this great information and for all the work you have done. And I'd also like to thank the callers. Thank you for joining us for this call. Best of luck on your organizing goals and preparing for the unexpected. We wish you a great evening. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.